Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. And by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. In-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 213. September 9th, 2015. We talked to Dave, K3LP, telling us all about the VP8 operation. Hello, everybody. Yep, it's me, K9EID. I do exist, and we are back again. It's been a long time, but been on the road a lot, and we'll talk about that in just a little bit. But we've got a really big jam-packed show tonight, as all of them have been. What a great job everybody's been doing. In fact, I think it's better with me not here, you know. we're going to take a little sing around here and see who's all here. We got Gordo and Southern Cal. Gordo, how you doing?
I am fine, Bob, and I have great news shortly.
Yeah. And Don, how are you doing? You okay?
I am awesome. It's good to have you back. And I have got information about an ARRL Day in the Park thing right here in my hometown. My adopted hometown of Picayune, Mississippi, this weekend. So if you're going to be in South Mississippi, I'll tell you about that in just a little bit, Bob.
Hey, and George, you got your smoke and solder happening. But wait a minute. You don't have a lot of time since you got another big job happening. How's that going? How are you?
That's going pretty well, Bob. I tell you, it's, it's tough work slaving over a hot soldering iron all day, but, you know, somebody's got to do it. I got a lot of good stuff we're going to give away tonight, so we'll be back in a little bit and talk about that. Yeah, there you go, Brian.
All right. Look at that. All right. Well, as a lot of you know, I've been out and about a lot of jobs and things on the road and rehearsals and all kinds of stuff. I got a few slides that I'll run through. We'll try to go through them quickly if we can, Brian. We started this little trick off in Memphis at B.B. King's place. This is a house band at B.B. King's looking at the mixer up over top. Got a great facility there. We build special microphones for the club. We've been doing this for a number of years, PR35s. They work really well. This is a very special friend. It's Lewis McKay and his wife, Jennifer. Sarah and I had lunch with him. He's the sound engineer for BB and put all that in. He was Al Green's audio engineer for years, but he's now out on the ship, on the Holland cruise ship line. They're putting B.B. King restaurants or clubs in all of these ships. It's going to be fun. But he said, you got to come, you got to make sure you're there on Saturday because the usual suspects, the band is playing. I said, well, yeah, but we were just here Friday night. He said, yeah, but look who shows up. It's Sheryl Crow. She just shows up. Why does she show up? Because that band, The Usual Suspects, is her dad. And this is the sweetest picture that I have had in a long time of a very high-profile artist. It's Sheryl Crow and her dad. And it was a sweet thing. And, man, he's a trumpet player and plays great guitar. And we had fun. We didn't move down the street to see our wonderful friend Barbara Blue. She sings the greatest blues. Oh, man, they call her the Queen of Beale Street. And she has a blue fin. Don, look at this.
Wow.
She also loves her microphone so much, she has it tattooed on her arm like somebody else we know.
That's awesome.
But what? You get to Beale Street, you got to find her. She's at Silky What is it? Silky O'Sullivan's. And boy, oh boy. It was Sarah's birthday. She surprised all of us with a cake, and the whole club's saying happy birthday. And we had a good time for Sarah. It was really cool. It was a great time for her. I did this for Dawn. She comes out of Silky, and the Shriners there were selling trances on a big Harley trike. What's Sarah do? She gets up on it. And,
of course.
She's probably going to win. Then what am I going to do?
you're gonna ride on the back. That's what you're going to do.
Yeah, you got that right. But, oh, we had so much fun. It was just great. Great trip. And one little side note, when she was 9, 10 years old, her grandparents lived right behind Graceland. Her grandfather helped do some of the yards. Her grandmother used to play cards with Elvis's mother in Graceland. And she hasn't been there since those days. Her grandfather worked for the Frisco, and she'd get on the Frisco and go down to see her grandpa. And it was kind of a fun thing for her to see it all these years later and all that. It was really a great time. So that's where we've been. We were in Nashville with all of that and so many other places. But I just thought those would be some of, especially that picture of Sheryl Crow and her dad. I just got, that was really cool to mix that set. And we know Sheryl from years past. She uses a lot of our stuff. And so it was kind of fun. It was kind of fun. Before I get on with Gordo, there's a very big event coming. I don't want you to miss this. I'm going to mention it again at the end. This coming Saturday starts the Route 66 event. And if you don't know about it, you're going to have so much fun. Just get on 75, 40, 20. Usually it'll be like 38, 66. 7266. We're commemorating the Route 66, and Springfield is the birthplace. So it's very special. This is a QSL card that you will receive when you work the stations. There's 21 of them up and down Route 66, starting in Chicago, ending in San Diego. So you want to catch on to that now, just to get on there and work them all. And if you work all of them, they have a really beautiful certificate. So you got to work 21 of us. But it's really a great, great time. We have so much fun doing it. But that's what I've been doing. It's enough for now. We'll come back and do a few other things that we have here. But we want to get out to see what Gordo's doing, because I know he's been doing a lot of fun things too. Gordon, take it away. Glad you're doing good.
All right, Bob. Well, we are cooling off here in Southern California. It's been over 100 degrees. So you head to the beach and you're in the water. That's 75 degrees today. And then you hear the lifeguards, everyone out of the water. We think, there's that hammerhead shark that's been patrolling underwater around the beach. Oh, no, thunderheads. We get home and about a half inch of rain. So you never know what's going to happen in Southern California. But one thing for sure, this weekend in Southern Cal, it is HamCon, the ARRL Amateur Radio Convention. Southern California, it's going to be held at the Marriott in Torrance. It's going to be fun for 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Now, Sunday is also New Jersey Gloucester County Amateur Radio Club get together. And also September 12th, Saturday, you in Louisville will have your ham fest. And also this weekend is the VHF-UHF contest, and we'll talk about that shortly. Next week, ICOM D-Star Party, Peoria Superfest, and the N4N Military Vehicle Convoy get started. Fresno next week has their a Rally in the Valley Ham Fest on Saturday. Henderson, Minnesota has a Smart Fest on Saturday. And weekend after next is also the 10 gigahertz contest. Now, panic not. Those of you with Ham Fest in October, Tupelo, Papa Jack, Wheaton, you'll be mentioned next week. But, Brian, if we can, let's take a look and see what's happening on the VHF-UHF airwaves. The contest will be on all frequencies from 6 meters on up. And if you have 6 meter single sideband, we'll meet you on 50.125. And once you start making contacts on the calling channel, move up this weekend 10 or 20 kilohertz. Remember, the contest is a full weekend long. So we hope to hear you on 6 meters. And that's what a 6 meter beam looks like on the top of the stack there. And we're hoping that we'll have good band conditions. And when we do have great band conditions, those with a tech license and higher can literally work coast to coast on 6. Now, there's also 6 meters FM, and a lot of mobiles will sport the classic, the Saturn. Bob probably remembers that. And that was a great loop in its day for going mobile on 6 meters during the contest. Now, for those with a 2 meter single sideband multi-mode radio, your calling frequency this weekend is 144.200. The mode is upper sideband, and once you get your antennas pointed in the right direction, you start making contact, move off the calling channel by 10 or 20 kilohertz, either going up or down on the 2 meter band. And if you're operating single sideband on 2 meters, remember, your contacts will be horizontally polarized. Oh, yeah, you could work sideband with a vertical antenna, but you'll miss a lot of calls. Even a horizontal series of loops. There's 6 meters, 2 meters, 222, and 432. Wow, that's a lot of mobile antennas. But notice they're all horizontally polarized. Oh, you don't have a multi-mode rig? Well, by golly, FM works quite nicely during the contest this weekend. You're not allowed to transmit on 146.520 during the contest. Rather, 52 is the national simplex calling channel, so we leave that channel alone and we go up to 146.550. Get on the air FM with a handheld or a mobile and just say your call sign, QRZ Contest, and see the many stations that'll be out there looking for you. If you got a handheld, don't wear it on your belt because your body is a perfect absorber of radio waves. Those are taking part in the contest this weekend are way up on mountaintops and they're looking for a little stronger signal. So you're going to make a contact, make sure you go to an outside antenna and a vertical antenna for FM on both 2 meters as well as 400 megahertz. I spaced out there, 446. There we go. Megahertz FM. And there it is, 446 is the calling channel. And you know, there's not a lot of activity, so you probably don't need to move anywhere. Make your contact, and you'll be asked to exchange your grid squares. So be sure and log on to ICOM America and download their grid square map for this coming weekend. No, you don't need a major antenna like this to work the VHF-UHF contest this weekend. You just need to have an antenna in the clear. So for single sideband, 2 meters, 144.200. Single sideband on UHF, 432.1. And again, on both of these channels, when you make a single sideband contact, be sure and QSY up or down the band so that you don't tie up the frequency. And again, for 432, you're going to be horizontally polarized if you're using single sideband. But if you're going to be using VHF or UHF FM, then you want to go vertically polarized. And this is a neat antenna from NCG. It's one that they import. Not a lot of them out there. But look how the elements fold away to stow it and how they fold out to get on the air. That one looks like it's for 432. And if you're running any type of an outside antenna more than 10 or 15 feet away on 2 and 432, including the 222 band, 223.5 is where you'll find FM contacts this weekend. And they're really looking for contacts. Run the big coax. Don't even think about the small stuff. Run the big RG8 LMR types. And for those of you that have a base station antenna, a dual band antenna, even a tri-band antenna, that's going to give you plenty of contacts out to 80 or 100 miles when conditions are right. Now, if you got a little tiny disc cone like this one, no, you're not going to get out as well as those fiberglass collinear arrays. So get that antenna up nice and high. Here's our neighbor across the street with one for vertical and one for horizontal, then the big beam below that. He's ready for any contest. For me, I do the triple element VHF, UHF antenna. This one's either from Comet or Diamond. They're both good, and they both really mean business. Tracy and Jody, they're getting ready for Pacificom, but I've been assured that you may hear their signals on the 2-meter band as well this weekend. And other operators, oh, there's our ECS team. They are ready for your contacts on 2 meters and 432 as well. And finally, there's Don, W6GPS, and he's ready to go aeronautical mobile. You never know where Don will be. So we look forward that all of you will have an opportunity to play radio this coming weekend or make that convention here in Southern California or Gloucester, New Jersey. But we hope that you play ham radio big time this weekend. So that's what I'm doing. Bob, back to you.
All right. Sounds like fun. And VHF is where it's at. That's for sure this weekend. And I hope that you you can really enjoy it. And it doesn't take a big station. That's the whole deal. Get on. And as Gordo and I talk about all the time, just get on the air. So you got a lot to do. Route 66 this weekend. And that's on all the frequencies. We're just so thrilled. George, what's going on down there for you this week? I know we're going to talk about ICOM, so let's do a little bit of that and see what happens. I got a question for you, too, before you get out of there, but what's going on in Mississippi?
Well, it's been kind of a couple of warm weeks down here again, but I tell you, the last couple of weeks seems to be all the transmitters are wanting attention for one reason or another. So we've been making the rounds, taking care of off-the-air failures and things like that. And I think Don and I talked about that a little bit last week. But started out the same way this week, but things are getting better. They're shaping up, and we're trying to get all our resources pooled where we've got everything where we know where it is. And that's always a big part of learning a new job. I've got a good question we're going to ask here in just a few minutes that I don't know how many hams are going to know the answer to, but it'll maybe be a toughie this week for some of them.
Hey, I got a question for you, George. I had a crazy thing happen here this week, and I've been on the air the last few days, and I also got two emails. I get a lot of emails, and I appreciate all of them, everybody. I try to answer everybody with their question. But one guy was sending me, he was putting up a tower, and he talked about his guide rope. And I heard two guys on 40 meters the other day talking about their guide rope. That bugs me about as much as Balaam. What do you know about a guide rope? You're a broadcast engineer. That's not right, is it?
I've never heard of a guide rope before. Maybe that's some kind of cowboy outfit or something. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I wanted to check myself, so I went to Wikipedia, and it tells you it's not to be confused. It said a guy wire, G-U-Y, or guy line, also known simply as a guy, is a tensioned cable designed to add stability to a freestanding structure, a radio tower, radio mast, utility poles. So there, everybody, it's not guide, it's guy rope. I'm sorry. I just have to be honest and straight with us, as that's what we do here, right, George? You can hit me later.
That's right. Yeah, and, you know, when we're talking about towers and we're talking about guide, that's either going to be someone who shows you where the top is, or it's going to be a special type of cable on there called waveguide that is just hollow, doesn't have a center conductor in it. But it's never going to be the guy wires that hold the tower up.
Well, wait, what if you're a YL? Would Valerie's tower have guy wires on it, or would it have gal wires on it?
Well,
and would they be galvanized?
They might. They might be. Question. Yeah.
Hey, Don.
I think of this stuff so you don't have to.
Yeah, but Don, have you ever stood beside Jerry?
Yeah, it's frightening. He's a big dude.
He's a big guy.
And he's a Marine. I started to say ex-Marine, but there's no such thing as an ex-Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine. So, yeah, he's an imposing cat. Hi, Jerry. Love you, buddy.
George, we messed up your segment pretty good, so I'll shut up. Don's going to shut up, and it's all yours.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, let's get a message from ICOM, and then we're going to come back. I've got stuff to give away this week.
Mark your calendars.
You're invited to the biggest D-Star QSO party.
Talk to the world by connecting through D-Star repeaters around the globe. D-Star QSO Party 2015 is this month from September 18th through 20th. D-Star continues to help amateur radio grow. It's an exciting technology that introduces new people to the hobby. It's high-speed communication and digital voice that's crystal clear. And the D-Star QSO Party is a great way to develop camaraderies with amateurs all over the world. Communicate through as many D-Star repeaters as possible throughout the world. Make contacts with D-Star stations and amateurs. Work as many foreign countries as possible to increase your chance to win. And get bonus points for including GPS position data and communications distance in your log. 10 qualified participants will be randomly selected to win an ASUS MemoPad 7. For complete party details and instructions on how to submit your log, visit ICOM America's amateur landing page. Then join the D-Star QSO 2015 party September 18th through 20th. Good luck, and make sure you visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on the 2015 D-Star QSO party.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation. Register to win for some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. And you can also learn how you could win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And for September, we've got a special radio here they're going to be giving away. This is the ID51A 50th Anniversary Edition. No, we're not giving this one away. This one is mine. It's a VHF-UHF dual-band handy-talkie, dual watch with D-Star, integrated GPS, micro SD card slot, fast DV data, IPX7 waterproof construction, near repeater list up for not only D-Star but also analog repeaters, enhanced DPRS, and a lot more. And I've had this now, I don't know, maybe 6 months or so. There is really a big difference between this handy-talkie and what else you're going to find out there on the market. A great handy-talkie, so go register to win at icomamerica.com/hamnation. And don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and on Twitter. And, you know, our smoke and solder contest, last week I had a question. That was about transistors, and it was, what are the three electrodes of a PNP or NPN transistor? And your choices were A, emitter-based collector, B, source gate and drain, C, cathode, grid, and plate, or D, cathode, drift cavity, and collector. And no, nobody guessed that D there. That's just, we don't even know what a drift cavity is. Anyway, we had a winner, and that was Cheryl Pemberton, KE0BTG. And Cheryl said the answer you're looking for is A, emitter, base, and collector. And, of course, you're right, Cheryl. So we're going to send you this DX Engineering 24-hour wall clock, a great clock specifically for us ham radio operators who like to use 24-hour time. So they'll be getting that out to you this week, Cheryl. Thanks for entering. And for next week, I've got another question here. What is the most overlooked parameter that's important that will affect the life of a tube? And just a little hint here, this is not something us amateurs can normally do anything about, but what's the most important overlooked parameter that can affect tube life? If you think you know the answer to that, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you're going to win a pair of Howe ProSet 3 headsets, a great pair of stereo headphones listening to music with. Also, use them with your amateur radio. I use them for everything. Great headsets there. Check them out, Heil ProSet 3s. Send your answer to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you may be our lucky winner next week. So right now, let's go back, and boy, I'm not even sure who's coming up next. I think it's Don, because we need to know what's going on in the news.
I got mine right here. Love these things. Yeah, I said Val's husband Jerry was a Marine. I think I'm getting him confused with Katie, WY7YL's husband. He's a Marine. I know that for a fact. If Jerry's not, he ought to be, because he's a big old guy. Hey, let me tell you about something going on here before we get into Newsline, right here in my hometown. It's ARRL 2015 Day in the Park. It's in Picayune, Mississippi. That's where I live. It's in the Crosby Arboretum. You need to Google this. This is a really cool place. Crosby Arboretum is a 64-acre facility operated by Mississippi State University Extension Service. It has woodlands, savanna, aquatic exhibits, hiking trails. It's gorgeous. And it's kind of hidden off in the corner. Anyway, it's this Saturday from 8 until 1, hosted by the Pearl River Amateur Radio Club. Get on the internet and Google them. That'd probably be the easiest way to do that. Pearl River Amateur Radio Club. Tailgating in the parking lot, the visitor's parking lot. There'll be a meet and greet at the visitor center. And lunch about 11:30. Small donation will be welcome. Prizes about 12:30. It's right behind the big Walmart in Picayune. You cannot miss that. It's if you're coming from the Gulf Coast, take I-59, exit 4. That's 43, Highway 43. Bottom of the ramp, take a right. Take another right there on the frontage road by the Walmart, and you're about a mile point two back there. 14521, 136, there it is. That's gorgeous out there. 14521, 136.5, that is the repeater to be on. 14521, 136.5. I'm going to try to go out there. So there you go. ARRL, Day in the Park. It's going to be nice. Let's get into the news of the week before I get completely carried away with Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1975, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, September 9th, 2015. We begin this week's newscast with the revelation that being an OM in ham radio isn't always just a casual descriptive. For one New York radio amateur, it is quite possibly the highest honor one can achieve in a lifetime on the air. Charles Charlie Hellman, W2RP of Hastings on Hudson, New York, was recently declared the oldest living amateur radio operator in the U.S., if not perhaps the globe. The 105-year-old has engaged in 90 years of QSOs, beginning with his first year as a new ticket in 1925. He was 15. The Quarter Century Wireless Association, whose members have all been active hams for at least 25 years, discovered Hellman's unprecedented amateur record quite unexpectedly during a recent update of the group's member files. Webmaster Bob Roski, N0UF, was doing the update and stumbled upon Hellman's listing and learned he was not only licensed and active, but living in New York's Westchester County, just north of New York City. What came next seemed only natural. The association chose to bestow on Hellman an honor that, like Hellman, had no equal, a certificate marking 90 years as a ham. While they were there, they even had time to make a quick QSO.
This is W2RP in Hastings on Hudson, New York. How are you copying?
Over.
Over.
5-9, Charlie, W2RP. This is 107XM, over. 5-9, full quieting. Nice signal, Charlie. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, and you have a wonderful signal. 5-9 plus. Can't beat it. Thanks for calling in.
Over.
Over.
Very good. Nice to meet you on the air, W2RP, NL7XM. 73, sir.
73, LX7M, W2RP signing. 73.
Congratulations, Charlie. A somewhat sleepy repeater near Chelmsford in the UK recently got a gentle wake-up call that set in motion some new possibilities for the Essex Repeater Group, which operates it. The activity on the Danbury repeater, GB3DA, is considered to be fairly quiet when no nets are scheduled. It's perhaps those moments of silence that served as inspiration recently for Kelly Atkins, M6KFA, during an episode of her recently scheduled online technology radio show, Frequency Cast. Taking a pause from the show on August 27th, Kelly put out a call on the repeater, backing it up with social media shouts on Twitter and Facebook. What happened next was a spontaneous on-air gathering of about a dozen YLs, including Dorothy Stanley, M0LMR. Now the women have been talking on the air and off about starting up a regular net for YLs. If you'd like to check out FrequencyCast for yourself, just point your web browser to frequencycast.co.uk. A camping trip among four friends and co-workers near Dinky Creek, California, turned into a rescue mission, made possible by Ham Radio. Four California State prison workers had just finished a ride on their ATVs last month when a hiker approached Avenal State Prison Officer Robert Tuck, seeking help for an injured friend who'd fallen during their trek in the woods. No one had a cell phone, but fellow corrections officer Jody Clark, KF6OPJ, had brought along his handheld, and using the nearby 2-meter repeater, put out a call to fellow ham Mike Rainwater, N6YIC, the correctional plant supervisor at Pleasant Valley State Prison, who then contacted the forestry dispatch number and emergency services. Clark also provided the GPS location of the campsite and a description of the woman's injuries, which appeared to be a broken wrist and possible broken jaw. Within the half hour help was there, the hiker was stabilized and taken for treatment. Had it not been for the ham radio hobby of Officer Clark and Mike Rainwater, the injured hiker could have been left alone for many more hours. And finally this week, a group of military veterans who were getting help readjusting to civilian life made use of a new tool to help ease that transition. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD, reports on the effort that took place this past summer at the Eagle's Nest at Sauk Center in Minnesota.
The Eagle's Nest at Sauk Center serves as a halfway house for veterans who have a hard time making their way back into civilian life. Seven members of the Digital Amateur Radio Club based in Little Falls spent a Sunday afternoon in July conducting an introduction to ham radio for the veterans at the Nest. Although many residents expressed interest, scheduling conflicts allowed only a half dozen veterans to attend. Those that did watched a slideshow and video presentation and participated in a Q&A session. They then progressed to live on-the-air contacts on HF, VHF, and UHF bands, including links via Echolink and All-Star. Operating modes included SSB, FM, and D-Star. Since the event took place only a few weeks after field day, the ham radio operators set up portable stations and temporary antennas. The event ran for 4 hours, and the vets were left with brochures, information sheets, and ARRL and Gordon West study guides for their technician and general class licenses. In a few weeks, there may be new hams on the air.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for over 37 years and counting, at www.arnewsline.org. With Heather Emby, KB3TZD, and Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT, at the news desk in New York, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 73, we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And now, here's Dr. Tamitha Scove with the solar update.
Earth hits a horseshoe solar storm that has given us a doubleheader when it comes to aurora. And region 2403, remember that bad boy? That was the region that gave us all those M flares about a month ago. Well, that region is about to return into view. Those stories and more in the news this week. Hi, I'm Tamitha Scove. The sun has been extremely active this week, not so much in terms of flares, but definitely in terms of filament eruptions. In fact, Earth is in a huge solar storm right now due to the set of filament eruptions that occurred right here. You can see the first part of this horseshoe kind of thing lifting off right there. That happened on the 4th, and then the other half lifted off on the 5th, and we had this kind of horseshoe configuration coming at us, and it has just been slamming us over the past couple days. On top of that, we had another filament eruption lift off from the northwest, and that ought to be hitting or grazing Earth right around the 11th, not expecting too much, but I'll talk about that in a minute. Switching to our M-flare threat meter, you can see the last big flares that we had were clear back at the end of August. Since then, things have continued to decline. We had a little pop on the 3rd, but other than that, things have gotten really quiet. Outside of the solar storm that we've been having, the radio propagation's actually been pretty bad because the flux level's been pretty low. Switching to our solar storm conditions, you can see back on the 29th, we had a little bit of activity, but that died down quickly. And then we had this set of solar storms, this horseshoe configuration that was launched back on the 4th. It hit us starting around the 7th. You can see we actually got to moderate storming levels, and that hit us first part, and then the second part hit us again, and that is still continuing as I speak right now. And so if you're an amateur radio operator or a GPS operator and you wonder why you're having trouble with the bands or trying to get lock on satellites, this is the reason why. And during the solar storm, we have gotten aurora pictures flooding in from absolutely everywhere, both aurora in the north and aurora in the south. It's just been stunning. You can see here's a quick picture from Scott Kelly on the ISS. The aurora has just been absolutely magnificent, and I will have a much bigger report of the aurora and get some highlights later in the week. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are still in the middle of this huge solar storm, this doubleheader that's been hitting us. NOAA is giving us about a 30% chance for major storm at high latitudes. At mid-latitudes, we're only expecting about a 25% chance of active conditions. But I tell you, aurora photographers who are down in mid-latitudes can tell you differently. The aurora has been spectacular. The disturbances have been pretty monumental. But we are expecting that to die down. As a matter of fact, some of the solar wind right now is showing an indication that we may be popping out of that storm as we speak. So things should die down, and then we might get another bump up around the 11th from that grazing solar storm that's moving off to the west of us, but probably not expecting too much of a disturbance. Although the Earth is pretty unsettled right now, so it doesn't take much to whip it right back into storm conditions. Nevertheless, the aurora should be dying down, and the amateur radio band should be kind of beginning to come back here over the next day or so. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook for the coming week, you can see for the first part of the week, we are still in the green. Everything is pretty quiet, but then region 2403 begins to peak around the horizon there on the east limb. And you can see the latter part of the week, we are expecting to increase the M flare risk. Don't know how stormy 2403 is. From the backside images, it looks like it's still pretty active in terms of being a flare producer. As far as radiation storms are concerned, we are still all in the green. We won't see that. We won't be able to know more until 2403 comes into view. So this week is already crazy busy. We are in the middle of this huge horseshoe solar storm that has been dogging us for days. Things should begin to calm down, though, starting around now. We might get a little bit of a disturbance for the next day or so, but things should be getting better, and hopefully it'll be nice and quiet by the weekend for the weekend contesting for all you amateur radio operators. Also, for all you GPS and drone flyers out there, you should be able to enjoy the weekend as well without worrying too much about your GPS luck. As far as the aurora photographers are concerned, you guys earn a very big rest this weekend. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Thanks, Dr. T. Good stuff. You see, I'm reading my DX Engineering catalog. This is a vintage. This is the autumn winter 2014 catalog. You know what's cool about autumn this time of year? Well, it gets cooler for one thing, but there'll be a new Autumn Winter DX Engineering catalog coming out soon. Ooh, I cannot wait. Something else about autumn and winter, it is time to start making sure your tower's in good shape. Now, down here in the South, we don't have to worry about snow and ice, but, you know, got to worry about hurricanes because we have hurricane season until November. But you got to make sure that your tower and your antenna is ready for another winter. And to help you do just that, DX Engineering will carry products, and they are from American Tower Company. They make a huge range of sections, bases, brackets, and accessories. They will ensure your tower delivers years of service. Now, the American Tower Amorite 25 series is hugely popular. Depending on the antenna that you're using, the Amorite 25 series will work in self-supported, guide, or bracketed installations. Every section is hot-dip galvanized, gives you superior corrosion resistance, then double-bolted to create extra strong junction between sections. And here's the cool thing. If you've got an existing tower, like, a Rhone 25 or a Rhone 45, the American Tower Company products are compatible and interchangeable. That means it's easy to find, upgrade, and repair parts in the future, whether you've got American Tower or Rhone, because it all works together. Products are available separately or in handy prepackaged kits. They eliminate a lot of the component matching guesswork. You can always call DX Engineering's Ohio-based tech support with your questions for advice, and they will steer you the right way. And the DX Engineering streamlined shipping process means you'll get your tower sections delivered to your installation site with zero hassle, zero headache, but plenty of RF. DX Engineering has professional spec element clamps too. Make antenna repairs now while it's still warm. You want to get out there working on that stuff when it's cold. Every clamp is precision made to the exact tubing sizes used in amateur radio applications. So if you're trying to mount a crossmember to a tower face, check out the DX Engineering Genius Clamps. They work well if you need a secure two-inch OD tubing at right angles. The only limit is your imagination. Seriously, get out there and start building stuff. Might also be a good idea to inspect your coax before the cold weather hits. If you need replacements, a lot easier to work on that stuff when it's warm. And you want to check out the DX Engineering low-loss coaxial cable assemblies. They are an excellent choice. They can be fitted with BNC, N, F connectors, pretty much any connector you need. And if you want to roll your own, your DX Engineering high-performance coaxial cable is available separately, either by the foot or bulk on spools. Get you 500, 1,000 feet of that stuff and, be ready for when you have a problem. Like when I took a lightning hit, I had a roll of coax, a big drum, a spool of coax in my backyard. I just replaced the whole thing, made it easy because I had burned through. DX Engineering also has a huge assortment of cables and connectors for virtually any application. Custom lengths, assembly options, not a problem. Just check out DX Engineering. And, of course, you know DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. Get your order in by 10 o'clock tonight Eastern. If it's in stock, they'll throw it on. Well, they won't throw it. They'll gingerly place it on a truck. With kid gloves. It'll be headed your way tonight. Proven products, expert advice, DX Engineering will help you shrink the globe. Request your catalog. Don't forget the new one coming out very, very soon, matter of weeks. Shop online 24/7 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. dxengineering.com/hamnation. Thank you so much for being part of our little Ham Nation family here. Of course, no one wants to look at our ugly faces all night long. That's why we have Val. Val, come on in and tell us what's going on DX-wise. Now, I said earlier that I thought Jerry was a Marine just because he's so big. Was Jerry a Marine, or did I misspoke? I know that Katie's husband is a Marine, but was Jerry ever in the Marines?
No, he was not.
All right, well.
I have just as much
respect for him anyway, so there you go.
In our backyard, you do need a guide in order to navigate the guys, because you could get clotheslined about every 10 feet in our backyard. But nope, not a Marine. Anyway, right, tonight we have a very special guest. We have David Collingham, K3LP. He's going to be on with us. Now, Dave was first licensed back when he was 15 years old. His 10th grade teacher, who's also his Elmer, Lewis Mallory, Whiskey Alpha 6, Delta Victor Kilo, was his mentor and got him into ham radio. I think we have some slides on that, Brian, if you want to show those first 8 slides on this. This was at Fontana High School in California. There he is. He's the top guy there, the guy standing up. He was also the club trustee of Kilo 6 Delta Golf Echo, which is the Dorothy Grant Elementary School. Which some of you guys probably remember when I interviewed Beverly and all her young ham radio operators that they had been working on licensing. And I think Dale showed a video, too, on them getting them licensed. But there's Dave. He's also an active member and vice president of the Intrepid DX group. He's been on over 65 DX expeditions. He enjoys contesting and DXing as well. And as a member of the ARRL, he has published numerous articles in QST and the DXCC yearbook. He was inducted into the CQ DX Hall of Fame in 2014. He also received the Potomac Valley Radio Club's President Leadership Award for his leadership in DX expeditions and youth involvement. He's a member of the ARRL-A1 Operators Club, and his DX expedition to ST0R, the Republic of South Sudan, which is kind of a scary place to go operating from, that nabbed him DX expedition of the year in 2013. So welcome aboard, Dave. Glad to have you with us.
Well, it's my pleasure, first of all, to be here. And I really love that DX Engineering magazine I saw.
Yeah, that's our Bible here as well. Lots of good stuff in there. As a matter of fact, you have a DX expedition coming up to South Sandwich and South Georgia Islands. And at the end, I'm going to show you an old video of an old DX expedition there in 2002. You can buy this on DX Engineering website, too. But anyway, so you got the big DX expedition coming up to both South Sandwich and South Georgia Island this winter. But, you know, I wanted to go back to the 53 or six over 65 DX expeditions. That's a lot of DX expeditions. Can you just name a few of the DX expeditions you've been on?
Yeah, I think it's been around 68 DX expeditions now with 78 different countries, but either arriving, trying to operate, but didn't get a chance on a few of them. The main ones, Tango 33 Charlie, Banaba, November 8 Sugar. That was a great D expedition, 117,000 Qs in 11 days. Back in the day, we were tracking first place tent and generator class was outstanding. Then the YI-9 PSE in Iraq, X-Ray Zulu 1 Japan, 7 Oscar 6 Tango, Republic of Yemen, 5 Alpha 7, 3 Delta 2, ST-0R, and then the one I got in a little hot water, Kilo 3 Lima Papa Stroke KP-5 Desecheo many years ago, and many more.
Okay. Very good. Well, that's a lot of D expeditions. You're very busy, obviously. Now, you got this really big one coming up. Now, these are both on the top 10 most wanted list, correct?
Absolutely. Number 3 and 7.
Okay. And now, how long has it taken you, or when did you start to plan this D expedition? How long does it take?
Well, I think without getting into a lot of politics, back in around June, July of 2014, both Paul and 6PSA and I were speaking. We said, listen, we need to go off and identify a few more targets for us to go after. And like any probably good or excellent de-expedition team, you don't start off by one. You probably identify four or five different locations. And one of them happened to be to go to Victor Papa, both South Georgia and South Sandwich Islands. And from that, we end up making submission, getting the authorization, and here we are today. I think Paul and I speak by telephone at least once or twice a day. There's a tremendous amount of energy that goes into a trip like this.
Yeah, how many man hours do you think you got in on this already?
The ones that I know of or the ones my wife knows?
whichever's higher.
I think just putting together some of the plans and the layout, I probably spent about 3 days, about 12 hours a day in detail, just putting those charts up on the screen. But if you can imagine an hour a day since, for over a year now.
Okay. That's a lot of work. Now, how are you guys going to get to South Sandwich in South Georgia?
All of our team is going to fly to Santiago, Chile. We'll land there preferably on the 8th, day before. On the 9th, we'll depart around 9 o'clock in the morning, arriving in Stanley, the Falkland Islands, around 3 o'clock, and we'll go directly to the boat. In order to save a little bit of time and not get hung up in the hotel, we're going to board the boat and get the heck out of Dodge and head on down to South Georgia.
I think we have some slides on that, too, if you want to roll the next 4 slides, Brian, too. Kind of shows, the Falklands. They're taking off from the Falklands, and then you're going to sail to South Georgia, correct?
Yeah, we're going to be on the Braveheart. This is a wonderful ship. It's 29 meters, 120 foot long, with a crew of 5. Obviously, the owner being Nigel Julie, and his son, the captain, Matt Julie, will host us on that ship, and we're really looking forward to it.
Now, how dangerous is this trek from the Falklands to South Georgia and South Sandwich?
Well, I think our crew, at least 50% of us, have done the South Pacific and seen some of the brutal part. But I think the big issue here is the trip getting down to South Georgia, and then it get more intense as we get to the South Pole. As you know, South Sandwich Island is about 58 degrees south, which is closer to the South Pole than Heard and Beauvais. So the environment's going to be a little bit more rough. Getting on and off the ship and getting our equipment to shore is really going to be a test of all of our skill and capabilities. And I think you'll find out a lot of our team members are really spending the time to lift a little bit of weights, get ourselves in shape, and get ready for this trip. So the big issue being cold weather, obviously South Sandwich will be brutal, quite frankly. And the winds on the island, 70 miles per hour, from what I'm told, that are average. Temperature will be around 32 degrees with a wind chill factor. So if we're lucky, we're going to be able to do grand things. Regardless, we're going to do grand things just no matter how big this effort is going to be. I know, talking with Paul, our focus is to make sure that South Sandwich goes off huge, and that's our goal.
Now, I know you have to go to South Georgia first, and you kind of got to go through some kind of training thing. And then go to South Sandwich. Now, how long do you hope to operate when you're on South Sandwich?
So the journey goes like this. We'll depart the Falkland Islands around January the 9th. We'll take about a five-day boat ride. We'll head down to South Georgia. We'll do our orientation there. And then we'll get out hopefully the same day. It'll take about a three-day journey to get to the southern point of South Sandwich Islands. Obviously, the big test is going to be getting our gear to shore. And if we're blessed, we're going to be able to load very quickly. If not, we could be stalled there for a day. So our goal is to be hopefully on the air towards, let's say, the third week. Without giving you specific dates, we have announcements coming out that'll really nail it down. But around the third week of January, we'll be on South Sandwich. We'll operate there for 10 days, load everything back into the ship, and then go from there, a three-day boat ride back up to South Georgia, operate there for 8 to 10 days, and then another five-day journey back to Stanley. We'll be back in Stanley on February the 14th. With our team departing back to the United States on the 20th Sunday. There's only limited flights out of there.
All right, and I saw that team picture. It looks like you got, what, about 14 operators going?
Yeah, crew. Yeah, the team, we've had about a 50% turnover. You know, like any major de-expedition, a lot of things change, but we're blessed to have some excellent operators on our team. 50% of the team is a known team through the Intrepid DX group, and this team has yielded in 100,000 Q to 160,000 Q on different DX expeditions before. So we really think that we have quite the team, and I'm very excited about the opportunity to work with some of the new guys, and new to ham radio, but new to our team. The beautiful thing about our team, over 80% of our team members are contesters and have prior experience of working high volume. So we're very excited about that.
Well, I know I'm looking forward to it. I need both of those for all-time new ones, as I'm sure a lot of people in the U.S. and around the world do. But now, how much is this de-expedition costing?
Well, this is the one that I think makes every guy answer to his wife, not much, honey. It's not going to be very much. We're going to be able to handle it. And the real cost of this thing is around, we budgeted $425,000, about $220,000 of that coming from our team members, roughly about $15,000 apiece. I think by the time they get done with their airline tickets and some other, you know, obviously clothing and things like that are important, they'll probably put another $5,000. So each member, about $25,000 will be thrown into this pot. Obviously, the airline ticket and the other $5,000 is not part of the monies. To date, I think we've raised... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, how much are you hoping to get from the rest of the DXing world?
Well, so right now we've received about $120,000. We're still in the probably of the $80,000 mark being short. We've had some incredible donations come our way. Obviously, some of the big guys like NCDXF, we're just so blessed to have them come on board. And I'll tell you a funny story that. I think in every de-expedition, when you leap out like this, there's always a turning point. It starts off with, oh, geez, don't let anybody in the family know the cost of this. Hopefully it'll disappear and everything will be fine. Then there comes this day about 4 months into it after donations arrive. We started off with Elcraft immediately donating the 6 radios, tuners, and amps. We're blessed to have them, absolutely. But after you get past that, you still have a lot of other expenses. You know, the main issue with this de-expedition is the number of antennas you can put up. So having triplexers, having duplexers is critical in order to operate 3 radios with 1 antenna and vice versa, or the 2 antennas with a duplexer. Buying this high power filters, the limited space on the camp is going to be critical for interference. So if we didn't go down with the right stuff, it would be a mess. And I remember about 4 months into this talking to Paul, and I said, Paul, you know, I've never been a quitter in anything I've done in my life, but I think we're in a little bit of trouble here. And I remember about 1 o'clock in the morning sending an email to Ranko, 4 Oscar 3 Alpha, and Bill Hine at Force 12. And essentially throughout our emotions at the time, obviously I'm feeling them right now again, that we need somebody big time to step up and help us. And immediately the next morning we were blessed with Ranko saying, Dave, don't worry about buying nothing. I'm sending you everything. I'm making you. I'm going to give you 2 triplexers, all the high band pass filters you need, and plus we're going to custom build you a duplexer for 12 and 17. And followed right behind that, Bill Hines said, don't worry about any antennas through 40. I'm giving you everything for free. Give us the antennas when you get back. And that in equipment costs was huge because we budgeted just on filters 10 to 15 grand and antennas another 15 grand. And to have these guys provide that just was the turning point for this de-expedition.
It is amazing how many vendors out there support these de-expeditions, and it's wonderful, and hopefully they keep that up because I know that helps a lot. A lot of the de-expeditions Jerry's goes on as well, so that's wonderful. Well, if people out there watching right now want to help you out, because I know there's a lot more expense with the Braveheart and fuel and all the shipping costs and everything like that, because I know a lot of your expenses are up front. A lot of people wait to OQRS after they've made the contacts, but really you need the money now. So if they want to help you out now, how can they help? And I know it's tax deductible because the Intrepid DX Group is a 501c3, right?
Absolutely. You know, the traditional budget, really around 80% of the money is needed up front. I was just conversing with Paul a few minutes ago to finalize where we're at, and really 98% of this money is going to be spent up front. A very small percentage at the rear end because obviously LZ1JZ is helping us with the QSL cards. He's absorbing that cost. So the only cost after the trip is really the fuel for the generators, replacing that with Nigel, and then also the shipping of the QSL cards. So of this money, of this extra 80 grand we're looking for, 98% of that has got to be paid before we leave. If we don't get the money as we're waiting for QSLs, then essentially Paul and I are going to have to carry this 40 grand apiece beyond our normal monies. Our preference.
And that's where they can donate.
Yeah, we need additional support. I wanted to put a couple things out there. Apparently, we've either screwed up or we haven't communicated properly, but Central, South America, and the Middle East, 4X, 9K, A6, A4, all and so on, we received no donations at all from that region. And I'm not sure if maybe there's someone out there who will hear this and say, geez, here's a means, let me help you. We really need their help in this. It's a universal effort, and our goal is to focus on everybody. If you go to our plans on our de-expedition web chart, you're going to find out that we have put a ton of energy into what we're going to do, and we plan literally on unheard of, putting four squares on 40, four squares on 80, and a phased verticals on 160. That's our preferred goal. We've got those antennas in the container. We're planning on working, people. And one of the things I also wanted to put out there is we're going to maximize unique call signs. And we want to make sure we do an excellent job from South Sandwich. We're going to be on all the bands. Some of the people that are interested in 6 meters and 60 meters will have antennas for them. We'll also be on 30. So we're putting all of our resources, and we're putting our team directly focused to work as many people as we possibly can. In return, we need the help.
All right. Well, everybody out there, hopefully you guys can help these guys out. I know if you donate in advance, you will get your QSL cards automatically. You don't have to wait till you have the QSOs and do the OQRS. You can give it to them early, and you'll be taken care of on your QSL card. So thanks so much, Dave, for joining us. I appreciate it. And I think we're going to talk with Dave as we get close, or I mean, Paul, as we get closer to the de-expedition, right? So we can look forward to that in over the winter.
Well, we really thank you for this opportunity to speak with your audience this evening, and we think you guys do an outstanding job. Have a great evening.
And remember to listen for the YLs when you're on the island. So
just, yeah, I think
that I need them.
And by the way, please tell Jerry, thank you for his contribution. It was huge.
Okay, will do. Yeah, he was lovingly working on all that coax for you guys. So, all right, thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Have a great evening.
Bye-bye. Now, as far as DXing goes, it's starting to be fall, so DXing is starting to come up. But remember Dr. Scott Wright, who I interviewed a few weeks back? Well, he showed me this. I have a slide if you want to show it, Brian, slide 19. DX World, they now have upcoming de-expeditions on a timeline at a glance. Now, there's September. And if you can see the, I wish it would show the country names instead of just the call signs, because like a lot of us, we don't have them memorized, but there's a lot of really good ones coming up. Zimbabwe, Cocos Keeling, Svalbard, Nui, all those ones towards the right, the Echo 6 and the Zulu 21. So some really good DX coming up, so get on the air. I will not be on the air this weekend for the VHF contest, but I will be at W9DXCC. So anybody in the Midwest area who's just starting off in DXing, it's not too late to show up and go to W9DXCC this weekend. There is a DX and a contest U on Friday, and then all the DXing seminars Saturday. And 2 weeks from now, I will, or 2 weeks from this weekend, I will be at Sedco W4DXCC. So I hope to see you guys either at W9DXC, W4DXCC, or I'll see you guys in 2 weeks. So I think it's time I headed over to Dale, who's got one fun look at a ham shack.
Very good. Hey, fantastic, Val. Nice presentation tonight. Enjoyed the interview. And we've got a ham shack to show you tonight. Won't rival your antenna farm, but it's a lot of fun. We don't have two or three shorter videos tonight to share, so we'll forego our usual length rule and present a longer combination shack tour interview. Larry, WD0AKX, up in Albert Lea, Minnesota, worked with Forrest. He's KC0KFL while he was working in the electronics field a few years ago. Well, Forrest retired, and Larry convinced him to get his ham ticket. And the rest is history. Let's watch together.
Hi, Larry, WD0AKX. Today I visited a good friend of mine who's been in ham radio many years, and I asked him if we could get a little video and do a little shack tour. So this is Forrest, KC0KFL. I hope you enjoy.
Well, Larry, it was good to have you here at the shack, and we'll take you inside and show you some of the stuff around.
Okay, name and call sign, and how'd you get started?
Well, Forrest and KC0KFL. And I've been, well, just about all my life a ham wannabe, and was active in electronics my whole working career, doing engineering work and sales. Enjoyed that very much. And money and family and business got in the way of ham radio, and so after I retired, Larry kind of pushed me into it. Said, well, why don't you get licensed? And this was...
Pushed or shoved.
Yeah, pushed or shoved. That was in about 2000, or it was in 99 or 2000, along in there. And I had been loosely studying the tech license, and so we went up to a ham fest, and Larry says, well, why don't you give it a try? Well, I did, and I screwed up and passed it, and so I started studying for the general, and at the next ham fest, then we went up, and I had been studying on into the extra a little bit, and so I took the test, passed the general, and there was some time left, and the guy says, you want to try for extra? Yeah, why not? So I walked out of there, licensed for extra. And it's been a lot of fun.
You've been enjoying ham radio ever since.
Well, yeah, doing a lot of contacts and getting a lot of cards, sending a lot of cards.
Yeah.
And it's a nice thing to retire into. I've had a lot of fun with it. And My wife complains sometimes about being a ham radio widow, but not very often. She knows I'm out here, and
she knows you're enjoying the hobby.
Yep, and she can come out and harass me anytime she wants. We've got these from my recording studio that I don't have anymore. These Sennheiser microphones, they're 421, 521. I don't remember. But they do a nice job, and this new sound enhancer from MFJ seems to work good. I've had it a couple weeks, and my ears do need it. And down here, a ham keyer for practice, and the power supply for my Tennessee Tin Toy, the Tentec Orion, and a light strip across the front of it just for fun and to help the eyes out, and the 600 auto tuner from LDG and the meter from it. And I just really like those. I haven't had them too long, but they do seem to work real well. Coming on down, my old MFJ power supply scanners to kind of keep track of what's going on around here. And moving over, a 2800 mobile that I've converted into just for base use with its a speaker. And the ASU450 tail twister. And then the my old pal here, that 847, I've had it for 15, 20 years. I really like it. And the auto tuner for it, a Drake SW8 shortwave receiver. And coming down, I've got ALS 600 Ameritron, which seems to do quite a nice job. The switching, the various antennas that I have come in here, and I can switch them to just about any configuration that I need. And it has been a lot of fun designing and putting it together, and by golly, it seems to work. As I watch young people, and not just young people, but the people that use the iPhones, the cell phones, and this sort of thing. And I have one, and I use it when I need it. But they are missing out on one of the important aspects of ham radio, which is the social part, contact with people around the nation, around the world, people that you normally wouldn't meet with iPhones, cell phones, this sort of thing. And I think they're missing out, and because you can be making friends, lifelong friends, by doing this.
And making friends on ham radio, do you have a lot of regular friends you talk to, or do you make a lot of new friends over time?
Well, Larry, just about every morning I'm on 2 meters locally here talking to people, and we have a regular net at 8 o'clock in the morning. And then on weekends, I check into the 3900 Club and the Upper Midwest Shrine Net. I am not a Shriner, but I like to talk to the people. And a couple of my close friends are Shriners, and they're on the net. I come out and I'll scan 20 meters and see if there's somebody on. Maybe I'll put out a CQ to see if somebody's listening to me. You can really get some long-distance contact sometimes.
While Morse code is no longer required on the ham test, it's still a very popular mode, and Forrest likes to keep his skills up. He also enjoys collecting QSL cards from those distant stations he has talked to.
One of my first contacts was Australia on 10 meters. It was open, and we had a good conversation. Another one was the island of Grenada. These were some of my first shots. I do want to mention my old buddy here. This is Frederick C. Constantine, which, of course, the initials are FCC, always watching over me here. Okay. One thing that I put up that gets a lot of attention is this sign. It says, Achtung, das Machine ist nicht für die Finger poken und Mitten graben, is easy schnappen der Springenwerk. Low infusion und poppin' corkin' mit spitzen sparkin' is nicht for gewerken by das Dummkoffen. Das rubber neckerin, sightseerin, keepin' hands in das pockets, relaxin' und watch das blinkin' lights. KC0KFL is monitoring the Blue Earth repeater. Is there anybody on? Wants to chat for a little bit. KC0KFL.
Forrest regularly monitors the 147.0 repeater in Blue Earth, Minnesota, along Interstate 90. Give him a call.
Well, Forrest, how about we go out and take a look at your antenna system?
Well, let's do that. It seems to work real good, and let's talk about it.
He also has a very well-thought-out antenna system.
All the cables come down off the tower, and they go into the box there with all the lightning arresters. And then they come out of there and come down and go into the house. Now here's the box with the lightning arresters in. They come down off the tower and go through the arresters, and they are mounted on a copper pipe and tied off ground to the tower. There are two HF antennas. One is a tri-bander that's up above there on the tower, and the other one is a delta loop, which is a triangle, which comes off the tower here and fed with 450 ohm twin lead. Now that is cut for 160 meter full wave, 542 feet long.
And there's one more hobby you have besides ham radio, isn't there, Forrest? Working on your CW, Morris?
Yeah.
Wait, let me start that over.
Larry, thank you very much for that great video from Albert Lee. And again, if you're traveling through Minnesota on I-90, be sure to give Forrest a call. He's on the 147.000 repeater. Well, we got an email with great news this afternoon. Don Hill, KE6BXT, has prepared a video highlighting the worldwide DATV operation the weekend or two before. There were stations in Australia, the United States, and the United Kingdom all participating in a 15-hour long event. Should be a very interesting video. With Don's video, we'll prepare another photo tour of ham shacks around Ham Nation. Again, this segment features your photos and your videos, so make sure to get some in as soon as you can. We're running a bit short this time of year. Just send an email link to your video on YouTube to hamnationvideos@twit.tv. Don't forget to send your shack photos to the same email address. Well, if you worked the Kansas QSO party and worked us as Whiskey Zero uniform last month, get your QSL card to us. We'll know you'll want a copy of the outstanding sunflower-based QSL card that Amanda K1DDN printed for us at Pike's Peak Printing out in Canyon City. She'll be on here in a few minutes. Oh, and I have the definitive answer to Amanda's question back in episode 211. So far, Steve, W7UDI, he was Whiskey 7 Hotel during the bicentennial event. He's mailed 107 copies of the special clean sweep sticker for that broadcast event. Well, that's about it. Look up another concert organist now, Dr. Bob. Bob, take it away. Good evening.
All right. Good to see you, Dale. And it's always good to see and watch and listen to some of the great videos that Larry comes up with. That's super duper. Very, very good. So please heed what he was talking about. Everybody needs some pictures of your shack. Don't be shy. Small, big, large, half undone, messed up like this thing. My gosh, I come home, I got wires all over this place working on projects. So please send some of your videos and keep them short. It's the only thing, if we get real long ones, we can only have one or so at a time. A couple of minutes and send them just to regular stills. We need those. We need those. Well, we're going to go back out here to Colorado. And Amanda, I want to make sure you're here. I got something for you before you take off. But how are you and Jeff doing? Missed you guys.
Oh, we have missed you dearly, Bob, for sure. We're doing great here in Colorado. Really glad to have you back, though.
Well, it's good to be back. I don't know if Don's on with us or not. If he is, why jump in here, Don? But I got the sweetest note last week, and Don got one also. And I'm going to read it to you real quickly. I don't want to read all of it, but it says, "Everyone at Ham Nation, I would like to thank you, Bob, and all for having me on the program. It was truly a fun time. I've loved visiting the Ham Fest and can honestly call you guys as my closest radio friends. You've influenced me from a very young age and have given me the motivation I need to continue enjoying the hobby." And I think Brian has a couple of pictures of this young lady. I hope those made it to you, Brian, if you got them.
Oh, okay. Anna.
Yeah, well, check out the other one. Nope, there's one more. This is the first time I met her. I don't know exactly how many years ago it was. Where is that? Did you not get that one? Oh, golly, that's too bad if you didn't.
I think I have it. Hold on.
Yeah, this is from Anna.
This is it,
and
right?
You will remember. There it is. Check that out, Amanda.
That is so cute. And now she's got to be 3 feet taller than you, right, Bob?
But yeah, she is.
She is so tall. I think she's as tall as me now. She is. Look at how tall she is. Yep. And it's such a great gal. I just love her to death. I love her whole family. Her dad is such an inspiration to all youth. And I think that he has a lot to do with her being in ham radio. And I just enjoy every time I get to hang out with those guys. I love it.
When she first came up there years ago, she had on an IDX T-shirt. I'm going, wait a minute. I think she's only like 10 or 11. It's just amazing. You remember she was on a couple weeks ago? She was the ham of the year in Huntsville. W0ANT. I just thought I'd throw that in there because I know you know her and we all love her. So I had fun finding those pictures. So let's see what's going on in the chat room.
Well, you guys, I sent Brian a picture real quick, like, because Gordo was talking about the Rovers and the UHF and VHF. This is parked outside our house right now. I'm not even kidding. We're storing it, and we helped do the UHF, VHF contests there. So if when you see one of these funky little vans running around, that's what they're doing. That big dish right there is 10 gigahertz. So I just want to throw that in there since Gordo was talking about it earlier. Thanks, Brian, so much. Appreciate that. Fun stuff. And you get lots of looks by the neighbors, by the way. So with that, let's move on. Val, I've got a ton of questions for you, but I'm going to throw one out to Bob here real quick, like, because he was talking about honesty with our viewers and making sure everyone has the right information. So with that, Bob, I know you're a big AMer. And it's funny, he gets back into town. What does he do? He sends us all an email and says, "Hey, you guys, catch me on 7290 on AM. I'll meet you there." And just kind of wanted you to talk about that just a little bit, Bob, because we have so many new hams that join us every week. What is the protocol for 40 meters for AM? It is 7290 up, right? That is the gentleman's agreement.
Long enough for me to here's the deal. Back in the 50s, there was a huge war. I mean, it was a war. Guys would go and beat on people's door, and I mean, they would have physical war over AM and sideband. AM had been on for, well, whenever, but when sideband came in about 1954-55, the AMers, there was this big war. Well, guess what? They became very good friends, and they had a gentleman's agreement. Now, everybody listen to me. You might be playing on your computer or whatever. Please, I want everybody to listen because I want you to understand this and I want you to carry it on with all of the people you know. There was a gentleman's agreement set up in the 50s and 60s, and they put 3870 to 3890 would be the AM window on 75. 3870 to 3890. On 40 meters, it was 7290 to 7295, right at the top of the band. Not much, but it was there. 20 meters was usually around 14268. There's also a small place up around 14330. And then on 10 meters was great, and that one still admonishes everybody that gets on 29.0 to about 29.1. And the problem is, over the years, the operators that were not involved back in this, and new operators, they just find a place and go. Well, wait a minute. Respect your respect all the other operators. And the AM guys have a place also, even though maybe you don't like it. Well, that has no effect. It's the fact that we respect those that had that gentleman's agreement years ago. And we all try to stay in our windows. We don't go flying around. But yes, that's where you find me most of the time, is 7290, 7295. And 3885, 3880, 3870. But have a lot of problem. If I hear a sideband station on those frequencies that don't respect it, I'm not going to pile in there and cause a big problem. I just go somewhere else and do something else. But that's the story on AM. I appreciate you asking, because there's a huge confusion today, usually by newcomers that don't know about the gentleman's agreement. And that's the case. So there you go. And I appreciate you asking, Amanda.
Absolutely. And we got caught blindsided by that when we ran as W1AW-0 here. I had no idea. And they were very nice. I think they were. Jeff and I were trying to clear frequency and see if we could start operating. And they said, oh, no, this has been our portion for a very long time. And I had no idea. So I think a lot of people have no idea. And I'd like to get that information out there for sure, because I think it's important. Thank you, Bob, for your answer. I'm going to move on here to Val, because I have a lot for Val. Valerie, you were talking, you showed that cool little calendar for the month. So Kevin from, I think it's New Zealand, he says, where is the best DX calendar to see what's on and where? Is there a website or something?
Well, I usually go to DX World. There's also DX Coffee is another good place. And then I just, I have my cluster set up. I have it set up to text me when there's stuff I need. It texts it right to my phone. You can do that through DX Watch. You can set up texts for countries you need or certain bands you need, and it'll automatically text you. So those are the ones I use. There's probably more out there, but that's what I use. Mostly DX World.
Okay, that's great. And I'm sorry, I'm looking through my questions here. So, and I have put this question out to a couple of the other ones out there, and I don't think I have addressed this with you, but someone was trying to contact one of the Katrina special event stations, and they could not hear them, but when they went to basically a remote station, they could hear them just fine. What is the ethics about contacting somebody on a remote base? Okay. Is that okay?
So they were listening. They were using SDR to listen to the station, but they were transmitting on their own radio. If they were using SDR to listen to the station and the SDR station that they logged into was in the same DXCC entity that they were operating from, then there's no problem. If they were listening, they're in the United States transmitting, but they're listening to the signal from a Polish state, you know, a station in Poland or something, then that would be an issue. It would have to be in the same DXCC entity, but yeah. Remote operation.
And okay. The next question I have is that, and this was sent to me a couple weeks ago, and I just haven't been able to catch up with you. Rick in 8VCF wants to know, how is it when you or Jerry contest, how do you guys keep from being fatigued out and continuing on in the contest? So let's say just a 48-hour one. He didn't give me a scenario, but let's just say one of the 48-hour ones.
Well, the older we're getting, the harder those are to do solo. But coffee, really good coffee works. And breaks. Take occasional breaks. Short breaks, only like 5-minute breaks. I like to go outside, get fresh air. When I'm getting ready to leave a frequency I'm running, then I'll go up and down the band and I'll pick off any molts I need. And then I go out, take a 5-10 minute break at the most and come back in and I feel much more refreshed. But coffee works really well. And multi-opping, multi-op one, multi-single or with multiple operators, one radio is a great way to really enjoy contesting. And if you can't stay up for those 48 hours, you get like 3 or 4 operators here and it's like a mini field day. It's like a social event and you can all get naps in and have a good time doing that. So that's how we mostly combat it by doing multi-single. So
that works. Yeah. And you guys can all clean up the floods. You guys can clean up the floods together, right? When they come in the shower.
Yeah, we have fun.
Yes, very much. Val, so nice to see you. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it has.
With that, Dale, I just have one question for you that I have been getting a couple of emails and some people are still trying to figure out their clean sweep certificates. Can you fill everyone in on how they're supposed to do that from the Ham Nation 200 special event?
Oh, sure can. I think should be no problem at all. The clean sweep was initially going to be awarded to anyone who worked all 6 of the 1x1 calls. As it turned out with the submission of the logs to Al and everything, when it was time to get that information out and get the certificates ready, all of the stations that were in the event period did get credit for W9H. So if you worked the other 5 and didn't work W9H, you still are eligible for the clean sweep sticker. Now, I've had some emails also wondering how to get the sticker. Well, the secret is this year we gave the job to Steve, W7UDI. He's the 20-meter net control gentleman, and we sent the stickers out to him. And so you send your QSL card with an SASE to Steve and tell him you want the clean sweep sticker. He will check the logs, and if you worked all 6 or 5 and W9H, then you will be able to get the clean sweep sticker to go right on your certificate. Make sense, Amanda?
I think so. And I have referred anybody that has had questions about that to you, Dale. So I apologize if I've sent them to the wrong person. But yeah, I knew that you knew everything about it. So we'll call that a clean. That's okay. I did that all right. So anyhow, Dale, thank you so much. And speaking of the 20-meter net, there is no 20-meter net tonight because Steve could not be here on the air. And Bill K5LN has some bad weather in his area. So no 20-meter net tonight, you guys. Hey, and that's all I have. Some fun questions and glad to be here. I'm going to send it over to you, Bob.
Well, that's great, and I appreciate all the questions from the chat room, and we'll be back here next week right in the middle of the W6R, the Route 66.
Nice card.
Yeah, I wonder who did that. Isn't that cool?
I don't know. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's very nice.
And there will be more for this event, so we'll see you. I'll be around somewhere on. I get on 40 on 7266, and there'll be a few of us on AM, but most of it's going to be around the 66 point. So very good, everybody. It's been fun back here, and we'll see you next week right here on Ham Nation. Pass the word, have fun, and keep the tubes and the transistors lit and warm. Bye-bye for now. This is K9 EID in the Ozarks.
Good night.